Our next guest in the studio is Nicole Newman, who is an artist and has an exhibition at the moment at the Tasma Terrace. Now, I said to Nicole, I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name of the exhibition because it's Yiddish. So I'll leave you to actually mention that, Nicole. So, Nicole, welcome to the studio.
Pleasure to be here.
And if you could maybe tell us what the exhibition's called.
It's called Gnevische Stickler.
And there you know why I didn't even try to say that one.
and in brackets it says sticky pieces.
No, tricky pieces.
Oh, tricky pieces. Sticky pieces. Tricky pieces.
Well, but it's sort of a vague translation.
Right. But you also said that, was it the first word?
Yes. Ganef is a thief and Gnevische is thief-like. But if you put it into Sticklach, which is pieces, it's sort of like tricky pieces, you know.
Right, yep.
You know, it's hard to literally translate something.
Right.
But that's about
as close as you can get.
Yeah.
Now, we always like to find out a little bit about who you are. Where did the whole art bug start from? Were you a little kid that loved putting things together, or did it come later in life?
No. Early in life. No, I did art at high school. I went to the National Gallery Art School. I would then,
how lucky were you when it was part of the National Gallery?
We were still behind the State Library. That was where the gallery was.
That's right.
Before the new one was built.
Yep.
No, we were there upstairs on the first floor and down in the basement. And about a couple of years into that, probably I think the final year, they had just built the new NGV.
Yep.
And then we moved across. At the back of the NGV is a triangular building, and we moved in there. And I graduated, and then I decided I would do some further study. I went to San Francisco Art Institute, thinking that because it was a time of pop art, and I thought, it's America, the centre of art. But I get there and it's really not so great, you know. So anyway, I came home and then I did a postgraduate degree when it was the College of the Arts. But it was still in the triangular building, but it had become the College of the Arts by then.
Yeah.
And then I went on and I had exhibitions. But then it comes a point when you get married, and I think it happens with women more than men, and you have family and your art practice really is low on the priority list because you're busy with other things. And I'd exhibited all the way up until I started having children. And then a group of us friends who are artists either went to art school or friends of women, we thought, we'll get into a group and we called ourselves the Bad Mothers. And we thought, look, we can't get a whole exhibition
yep.
together. But as a group, we only have to put in two or three items. You know, we can have a group exhibition.
Smart thinking.
Yeah. And that sort of got us back into the practice of
art as well.
Yeah.
And that would have been a little bit groundbreaking in a way that you were doing
we
it.
We got a lot of press.
Yep.
A lot of press. And it then went, we exhibited in Melbourne, and then we went to Sydney University to Tin Sheds there.
Yep.
And after that, I thought, you know, because I was a sculptor and always had been, and I was working on quite life-size objects and sort of always had a bit of historical references, but with a bit of pop art in it and a bit of found objects. Well, I thought, I've got to bloody store these damn things. I've got to think of something that's a bit smaller, you know. And also, I have a low boredom threshold. So if I've already explored everything that I need out of a particular medium, I've got to move on. And so I had gone to an exhibition with a friend at Pinacotheca, which no longer exists. And I saw a digital print there I didn't like the print itself, but I loved the quality of it. I thought, that's for me. So I went and did a Photoshop course. I bought myself a Mac, which cost an arm and a leg, and those, we're talking 1999.
Right.
And a big digital printer, and I started making digital prints, and a big high-resolution scanner. And that's when it was really where the Yiddish and the historical plus the pop came together. And I didn't care that people couldn't understand the text, because it can read just as text like you would any other element of a piece of art. But I just liked it that it was just a little bit exclusive, and it's only for a few people who know the language would they get it, right? And it's even it's a bit of a dying language anyway, so it's sort of like a little secret, you know, that most people are not in on, you know. And then I decided I would do, and it was a follow-on from the digital print. When you're doing the prints, there's always proofs. And it was on lovely, I was using lovely cotton paper. It was fabulous paper. And I thought, it was such a waste to throw these bits of paper away. So then I thought, there's an old craft called toll, which is layering paper on top of each other to make a three-dimensional image of the same. I thought, let me try. So I did that, and it looked great. So I thought, next exhibition, forget the prints, it's now the toll. I mean, you still had to print out the images. So, and again, it was similar iconography with a bit of Yiddish text. And then I had a few exhibitions of that, and the first lot was sort of more utensils, knives and forks, but the old-fashioned silver knives and forks or serving spoons. And the second exhibition became more botanical and faun, like insects and flowers and things like that. And again, with the Yiddish text, but not as obvious. It was sort of hidden. So you had to know where to look for this stuff. And then I came to a full stop, because I'd already explored everything out of this medium, and I didn't know what else to do. And I was so bored, because I thought, if I go on with the same thing, my heart's not in it, you know? So for a few years, I'm thinking, I don't know what medium, don't know what to do. And then a few years back, probably maybe 2013, I thought, silversmithing, that's what I'll do. So I saw that RMIT had an advanced single course of silversmithing, but not a beginner's course. So I rang up, well, if you want to do a beginner's course, you've got to do a fine arts degree. And I thought, oh no, I've already got a fine arts degree, I'm not going through that. So then, all right, I'll try NMIT. So I ring up and speak to a woman there, and she says, look, you can come and you can present your work, but there's a woman who does private classes in East St Kilda. So I took down the name but just left it. So I go to NMIT with my big portfolio of sculptures and things like that, and didn't get in. I thought, okay. Then a friend of mine was working in the art department at Box Hill TAFE, and she was a furniture lecturer. She said, look, they've got a jewellery course there. So I rang up, yes, you can come next year. We'll let you know in February. Well, February came, I ring up, well, oh, it's been cut. Mm. So that's when I called Janet Marnell Brown, in the book I've given acknowledgement, and she's actually a jeweller, and she has in her home, I think, five stations, you know, for five students, and you get almost one-on-one, and it's once a week, 3 weeks out of the month. So I thought, I'll go. What have I got to lose? So I started, and you learn the basics in silversmithing. Well, it's not silversmithing, but you work in silver, and it's really jewellery. But you use the same techniques whether it's silversmithing or jewellery. So it was a way of learning the technique. And after I'd done a ring and a bracelet and a necklace, and I love jewellery, but not to make. So then it got to a point where I thought, you know, I'm going to make a big lobster as a pendant, because I had made a lobster as a toll. I had made two of them, in fact. And, well, it got so large, and I used that image in the silver. But it got so large, I thought, you know what, this is good for a sculpture. I'm not going to make it into a pendant. So then I thought, now how am I going to exhibit it? You know, how am I going to present it? And then I thought, you know, maybe Perspex. Because I've worked in Perspex before. I've used it in sculpture before. And then I thought, oh, I'll put it in a box. And it sort of went from there. And so in the beginning it was rather slow because you're just feeling your way. And I started engraving the boxes.
Yeah, which I love that.
Yeah, so I engraved the boxes and put silver hardware on the lids, all the boxes open. And I put a bit of text, a bit of Yiddish, like it was in the prints. And I thought, oh, I'm on a roll here. So from then on, that was 2004. 2014 is when I started on the sculptures. Yes, beginning of 2014 is when I started the jewellery. By late 2014 is when I started the sculptures. And I just used the same iconography as my prints in the sculptures. So I did insects, I did flowers, I did cutlery with fingers, and I cast epoxy fingers, my own hands, and used those.
How do you use that? Because it almost looks like a jelly form, doesn't it? Sitting on top of the silverware, the fingers.
The fingers, epoxy is really quite hard. It's hard.
Oh, is it?
It's a resin. It's a resin.
Oh, it's a resin. Right.
It's a resin.
Right.
But it's clear. I buy the clear version, and then you can either colour it if you want. And some of them I put a slight yellow or a slight
or green,
blue or, yeah.
A bit of green.
Yes, but it needs to be translucent.
Yes, yes.
And not opaque.
So obviously you've picked up on this silversmithing, and you it's beautiful, the work you're doing.
Well, once you know how...
Oh, no, I think you were just a very clever person.
But I also had a teacher that if I came across a problem, particularly if I wanted hinges, how do I make silver hinges? How do I make a silver screw? That she was there to teach me, because she had so much practice and had, you know, so...
And how big are these pieces?
They're about 30 by 40 centimetres, but it varies.
Yep.
But not less than 30 centimetres.
Yep.
You know, they can have different configuration, maybe more square, more narrow, but they're not absolutely tiny. And part of putting them in the boxes were, I always liked in 18th century and 17th century and 19th century, people would go on grand tours and the wealthy, or would buy certain objects and they would put them in little cases and they became objects of virtue. And that's really also informed my sculpture.
Yeah, and because they take on a form of beautiful when you first glance at it, but then when you look a little bit closer,
they're like a bit odd.
The resin fingers sticking out of a knife or a fork base.
Yes, yeah.
It's fun, but it's also a little bit
it's
bizarre.
It's a bit peculiar. Yeah. It's bizarre. Yes,
but just beautiful to look at.
Oh yes, I really look. I've got to say, this is my taste. I really love. I'm not a minimalist. I really like, and it can be utterly contemporary, but I like to see craftsmanship in the artwork and in the art. And that's what appeals to me when I'm looking at art as well. Craftsmanship. It can be completely contemporary, but that there's skill there.
Yep. And how long does each one take? Because they look quite involved.
They are, but I work rather quickly. So if it takes longer than 3 weeks, I'm nearly bananas.
For each one?
For each one. And sometimes it can be less than that. I've now got it. I'm now on a roll.
Right.
I'm on a roll now. I thought, you know, instead of working piece by piece, I decided, because I was going through it. Last year wasn't such, for the family wasn't such a great, it wasn't terrible, but it was, you know.
A tough time.
A tough time. And I thought, look, I don't have the focus to do a whole piece, but I can do pieces. So when I would go to class, I spent months doing a whole lot of insects. And then I did a whole lot of flowers. And then last summer, I did a whole lot of epoxy casting of all fingers, a whole tray load. And then I did a whole lot of hinges and feet, you know, that go under the boxes and stands. So I did all those, and it almost became like stock, so that when I started to work on the work after this, which was second half of last year, when I could start to focus, I thought, I've got all this stuff. So I put a bit of this and a bit. I had all the elements there. I didn't have to make them really, except the box itself. I just had to put it together.
Mm.
And it was just a way more efficient way of working.
Yeah. And where are you? Because it comes across as very old worldy, even though it's quite contemporary in a lot of ways. But as I said, you know, like the closer you look, the more you'll see the bizarre fingers sticking on top of a fork. You know, like, where are you exhibiting it? Because it comes across as something from the Victorian era.
It does. And in fact, Melinda Martin, who's the director at Linden, I'd already given her a concept of how they needed to be displayed. And they needed to be displayed in the dark, because if they're put on anything light, it loses all the detail. So it has to be on black or dark grey. So I'd already had that mocked up as a way of exhibiting. And because they're in temporary residence, she thought, well, it wasn't appropriate for where they were. But the National Trust, she saw a few spaces with Martin Green at the National Trust, and she saw a space at the back of Tasman Terrace, which is a long, quite a wide corridor that runs the length of the five terraces at the back.
Sorry, where's this?
It is Tasman Terrace is a National Trust a set of five terraces next to the Park Hyatt behind Treasury.
Oh, yes, I know where it is, yeah.
Behind those buildings and attached to those buildings at the back is a new corridor that's been built with very sort of narrow windows on the walls, but mostly it's painted in dark grey. And she thought that was a fabulous space.
Smart girl.
Very smart girl. I mean, without Melinda Martin, it wouldn't be anywhere. Yeah.
Well, we've had her on the show many times. She's wonderful.
And she was so supportive. Yep. She was terrific. And she thought this space was just perfect. Not only that, we could use one of the other Victorian rooms. And if you pulled down, it had furniture around the edges and a few bits in the centre. But the area in the centre could be moved, and it had blinds where you could actually almost block out the light. And so if you had adequate spots on it, that would be just fabulous room as well.
Yep.
So I've got those spaces because, part of it is because it has a historical reference, the sculptures, and it's in a historical building, you know, which is...
Works perfectly.
It works really well.
And when does it open?
It opens on the 22nd. Oh, no. The opening itself, the official opening, is the 22nd of February, between 6 and 8. So it opens, you know, to the public the following day, the 23rd. Yeah. But it's because it's a National Trust building, it's only weekdays from 9 to 5. It's not open the weekends.
And it runs to
it runs till the 9th
of March.
March.
And to find out more details about it, you go to Linda New Art and the details.
.org, yeah, and we'll have everything there. And, in fact, we'll have a catalogue. It has a digital catalogue on the site.
Right.
And it probably will have... They did a short film as well, so they'll probably have that.
Yeah.
And there's a Q&A on... And it'll have it on the site. There's Q&A on the 1st and on the 6th of March.
Brilliant. Okay, people, you've got to go and check out this art, even just by going to Linden New Arts website to check it out, because it's extraordinary. You've done a wonderful job, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And get down to the National Trust just behind or next to the Park Hyatt. It's in front of the Park Hyatt, isn't it?
It's right alongside, you know, the Park Hyatt. You have to drive down that drive. Yep. Well, it's right on the edge there to that side street where...
It's MacArthur Street, I think it is.
Just that runs alongside the old Peter Mac.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Pleasure.
That was Nicole Newman, and as we said, check it out, all the details at Linden New Art. Say the name of the exhibition.
Genevische Stickler.
Yeah, in other words, you know, like you'll never get it. So look up Tricky Pieces on the website.
You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.